Hello, and thank you for downloading Wax Lyrical, the advertising and marketing podcast from Wax On and the Marketing Society. I'm Paul Jacobs.
And I'm Karen Harry. And in this episode, we are talking no and low alcohol with two brilliant founders who have created great products and built successful businesses. Amongst other things, we'll be talking about the alcohol-free boom, proving healthy can be fun, what the future of alcohol-free looks like. Plus, we'll be asking our guests about advice to their younger selves and their favorite TV ads.
So first, I'd like to welcome Ellie Webb, founder of Calenio Drinks, a range of tropical alcohol-free spirits inspired by Ellie's Latin roots. Ellie was named Southwest Entrepreneur of the Year this year at the Great British Entrepreneur Awards. So there's the embarrassing bit out of the way. So hello and welcome, Ellie. Thank you for joining us. And actually, congratulations on the launch of your new alcohol-free spirit, Dark and Spicy, this week. How is it all going for you?
Thank you very much. I'm very happy to be here. Yeah, no, it's been a busy couple of months. In fact, it's been a busy year. I think what was lockdown and everything. Yeah, it's just been nonstop, to be honest. But really excited to be launching, to be able to launch a new product amongst everything, and really excited to be here today. So thanks for having me.
I'd also like to welcome Amanda Thompson. Amanda is the CEO and founder of B Corp Certified Thompson & Scott. They're producers of Naughty, which is an organic, non-alcoholic sparkling wine, as well as a vegan Prosecco. Got another embarrassing cred. Amanda was voted one of Business Insider's coolest people in food and drink in 2015. That is quite a credit.
Yeah, that was crazy. I think I was up there with George Clooney, so not bad.
Cool. Well, welcome, Amanda. Thank you for joining us. And we'd like to start just by learning a bit more about your commitment to quality in your products. Clearly, that's something that helps to make Thompson & Scott quite unique. And it would be great to hear about where this all kind of started for you. And we'd also love to hear a bit more about your journey to becoming a B Corp.
Sure. Well, quality is pretty much everything for me. I came from the world of champagne snobbery. That's not to say I'm a snob, but I was obsessed with good champagne. And as an arts broadcaster in the early days, when I was asking questions rather than answering them, we used to work hard and play hard, and champagne was my poison. And so that kind of obsession with the perfect taste really led me full circle in the end to creating my own brand. So for me, there's no point launching anything in the drinks business, no matter how good your brandy is, your idea, your marketing, unless you have a perfect taste. So that's what drives me, the perfection of taste.
And can you talk to us a little bit more about your journey to B Corp?
Yeah, that was a crazy one. It's always been an obsession of mine as an entrepreneur, really, to make a huge difference in the world. And I saw an opportunity to change the drinks industry. And for me, part of that was really going all in on eco-credentials and being as sustainable as possible and shifting the industry to being much more open and transparent about what was going into bottles. Because in 2020, we still don't have ingredients lists on bottles, which is pretty damn crazy if you think about our obsession with legislation. And you know, if you think about anything legal you're putting in your mouth, let's keep this clean. It's, you know, every microcosm, everything is analyzed, and we can open a bottle of something and you actually don't know what you're drinking, which I think is actually quite shocking. But the B Corp thing was an obsession. I've always been fascinated with the founder of Patagonia, who, you know, now is a billionaire, you know, philanthropist. But when he started and he's kept this going, his obsession was to do with changing the world through clothes. And of course, his recent campaign at Patagonia, he was putting people off buying things. You know, he's always said, we actually buy too much stuff. And that led me thinking more and more when I was creating my business about, you know, not just creating a drinks brand, but changing the world and making it a better place with drinks. And B Corp was a huge part of that for me, because there's actually not that many companies that have the certification, but it means you're buying in to so many ethical sort of beliefs, not least a tricky one when you've got outside investment, which is actually amending your articles of association to say that you will make business decisions based not just on commercial aspects, but also on ethics. And I think in 2020, of course, it's become desperately focused and fashionable, you know, to recognize that profit with purpose is everything. But I think it's just as important to do the right thing when people aren't looking as when they are.
Yeah, it's no mean feat to be certified. So, yeah, well done on that part, Amanda, for sure. And
thank you. I'm still exhausted from the paperwork.
Yeah, using the language fashionable is a very good point. But yeah, I know there's many a hoop and many a paperwork to go through. So congratulations. Okay, so Ellie, coming to you, tell us a bit more kind of how you decided to create a range of alcohol-free spirits.
My journey with alcohol-free began around 4 years ago. So it was 2017. I decided to do dry January for the first time. I worked in the drinks industry. I worked for a company that mostly dealt in selling alcohol and booze, basically. So it could become a bit overwhelming, and certainly Christmas time, Christmas parties, lots of drinking, lots of going out, just became a bit much. I needed to have a detox and take some time out. And I remember being out with some friends in Bristol. We went to watch a band. All the pieces were there, you know, music, friends, laughter. But when it came to what was actually in my glass, it was just really uninspiring. You know, I looked around me, everyone was, you know, drinking glasses of gin and tonics, exciting craft beers. And I just thought, well, I'm getting offered cola or lime and soda or water. How unexciting is that? Mm-hmm. And I just kept coming back to that. And throughout the month, I kind of struggled to find something I wanted to drink. I just started questioning why. Why is it when, you know, I come from an industry that's so exciting, so innovative, yet they've really got this wrong when it comes to not drinking? And you know, I was looking around me and talking to friends. More people were trying to find alternatives to alcohol that didn't feel childlike and weren't just squash or soda, and there just wasn't really much out there. So I guess I decided to do something about it. I started experimenting with different botanicals. I knew a little bit about the distillation process through my work, and understood that, and so just started experimenting. And then a couple of months later, actually, and I'll talk about it later on, I guess, but the inspiration for the brand and actually what the brand would become was really linked to my Latin roots. So as a child, I spent a lot of time in Colombia, where my mum's from, and I actually chose to go back there in 2017. I hadn't been back for over a decade. Took my boyfriend and we travelled all around the country, and it was just such a vibrant culture, such warm, happy people, and it kind of just reminded me of this amazing childhood I'd had growing up there. And actually it sort of just clicked. I was like, the non-alcoholic drinks space just needs to become more exciting for people. And right now it's not. So really, I guess Kalenia was born in South America. I just, you know, coming back from that trip, I either thought, well, I'm going to forget about this idea and go back to my day job. But actually I was more excited than ever to bring it to market. And I knew exactly what I wanted it to be about bringing more joy to not drinking.
Well, I think it's safe to say that probably all of us, and certainly all of our listeners, can relate to that story, whether you've been dry Jan or the duty driver and kind of feeling very unsatisfied with your drink choices. So yeah, very relatable. And yeah, we will definitely come back to the brand story for sure. And it's interesting talking about this gap in the market, this growing gap that more and more are filling. So Amanda, coming to you, kind of your business is Karen Touched, and you started in alcohol, but you've obviously moved into alcohol free with Naughty. From your perspective, what were you seeing? What changes in consumer behavior were you seeing that gave you the confidence to make that shift? Kind of, I guess, particularly attitudes towards alcohol. But yeah, what were you seeing?
Yeah, well, I used to, I suppose, a bit like Ellie, I was in the media and would drink hard and play hard. And so for me, the fun started with the pop of a cork. So that's that oral sound. I've just we've got a Waitrose, because we're launching just next week with Waitrose, and we've got this ad. And that moment for me is what delineates a really pedestrian day into a special day, that sound. And I think it really was always on my mind. It was gnawing away at me. And we were actually later to launch than I wanted to be, because I mean, as a journalist, I suppose you're always very zeitgeisty, and I'm always next thing. And the Alcohol Free Space in my mind commercially was a big opportunity, but more importantly was an opportunity, you know, from a wellness perspective. But I was going back to that obsession with purity and taste in the wine space. It's really, really, really hard to make a good alcohol free. I mean, so hard. And arguably that's why no one's managed it. One of the reasons, hopefully until now with Naughty. So it became almost like my Willy Wonka obsession to create it, but I couldn't. And it took a long time. And so we were ready to shift conceptually into alcohol-free before I could launch it, because I just couldn't get the flavor and the profile, and I couldn't get it ready to launch. And so that really became my labor of love, I guess. And so we launched Naughty just under a year ago. And so it's going into Waitrose. We're selling it all around the world. And I think... my heart's breaking for a lot of my entrepreneurial friends, as I'm sure Ellie's is, you know, who are really struggling much more greatly right now in the SME space, because so many businesses are being curtailed and having cash flow disasters with lockdown. But I think Ellie and I and businesses like ours, we've got a huge opportunity in the pandemic. And then Jancis Robinson, I suppose the world's most famous wine writer, in the first lockdown, her team online did a whole piece on us and declared it the potential holy grail in alcohol-free drinking. And so it just went crazy online. I mean, my phone was, you know, ringing off the hook, and international distribution. And so luckily my hunch about it was right. And so here we are, and we're moving very strongly towards alcohol-free and being the alcohol-free specialist in the wine space. I'm already getting asked to consult on projects, and we've got a number of developments in the alcohol-free space next year. So that's really where we're at.
It's interesting, not an observation, kind of a lot of kind of anything that's kind of hyphen free, call it dairy free, meat free, they're one of the biggest challenges they face is taste. So it's fascinating to hear you talk about that, because it's kind of always the big one to overcome, should we say.
And I think importantly, we're finding people are drinking Naughty because it's Naughty, not just because it's alcohol free. At the EY Entrepreneur of the Year last year in London, the last big fun party I went to in the real world, they were having our organic Prosecco, which is delicious, let me say, for those who do drink, and Naughty. And it was fascinating to see how many people were choosing Naughty, and also the placebo effect of people really getting louder with their conversation and the party starting in their minds with those Naughty corks popping. And that for me was a moment. I was like, yes. That's what I wanted.
Yeah, and speaking of challenges in terms of, I guess, broadly speaking, being a free from, or however you want to classify it, one of the other big challenges we know there is around convincing distributors that there is the gap in the market. I know, Ellie, you spoke about really identifying that niche and wanting to fill in that gap in the market. And we know that you actually focused your distribution strategy off trade. And we'd love to know a bit more about that decision and also what that's meant for you during lockdown.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. We did as a brand, you know, first of all, I launched the brand online on our own website. So we were available originally from calenyodrinks.com. That was kind of my first platform. And then very quickly, we launched in around 500 Sainsbury's stores. It was just one of those kind of moments where I was approached by Sainsbury's. They were looking at building more of an alcohol-free offering for their customers. I was getting ready to launch Calenio, and they just really loved the product. And I thought, you know what, it's one of those now or never moments. So I'd love to say it was a kind of really thoroughly planned process, but actually one of the driving forces behind the business for me was around accessibility. One of my key frustrations was I couldn't just go to the supermarket and go to the shelves and, you know, take home a load of alcohol-free options. That for me was frustrating, and I felt frustrated that, yes, there were a few options here and there, but they weren't accessible to people. And You can't get much more accessible than being available in around 500 supermarkets across the UK. So for me, it was a big win. And from what I could see early on, the alcohol-free market was forming by people actually experimenting at home. Rightly or wrongly, I think people sometimes felt a little bit embarrassed when they go out and, you know, have to explain to people why they're not drinking. Oh, are you pregnant? Are you ill? What's wrong with you? Which is totally wrong. And thankfully, that is now starting to disappear. I definitely, you know, people don't get challenged quite as much now. So I think actually, you know, really the alcohol-free started in the home. So it started with people ordering online. It started with people going to shops and trying to find different options. So, you know, it was just really about making sure that Kalenia was available in those places, which was at odds with, you know, my career. Actually, I left a career in the on-trade, which is pubs, bars and restaurants. And, you know, people said to me, why aren't you launching it in the trade? And I said, don't worry, you know, I will come. Kalenia is all about making not drinking more joyful. So don't worry, we'll get there. But right now, we've got to be here because we've got to make this category more accessible for people.
And Amanda, I think you've actually had a lot more focus on the hospitality sector. And we were interested in what that's meant for you this year and how your focus has had to change.
Yeah, it was interesting. I suppose we just fast-tracked our direct consumer growth because we were already selling DTC online and we just really fast-tracked the noise that it was there and we could do that. And Waitrose was always the one I wanted to start with, and so it was fortuitous to get that over the line within the year. The plan was always to launch there within the year, so that was our brand build plan. And so we're completely omni-channel. We are a brand that loves a party and we do love real life. So we're all about focusing on now on how we bring that party spirit to the home. But I'm obsessed with real life and we've got so many wonderful friends in hospitality and we're doing whatever we can to support them. And so omni-channel for us as a brand is completely the way forward. And of course, because we've got international partners, lots of our new territories and partners are opening up now, which is great news. So we've just brought on New York, which has obviously had some dramatically hellish times during COVID and not easy still, but restaurants are starting to open up and we've just done a new deal with a chain there and California, we've got some stuff going on. So I think for us, omni-channel is a key strategy. But what I do love particularly about the direct consumer is that direct communication line with your customers. And for us, that's everything. And we have this mantra as a team that we are obsessed with customer service and making people happy. And it's just lovely for me as a founder, you know, to really dive into those emails that come in. And, you know, and we all share out. For me, I'm obsessed with making sure everybody has that customer service touch point. And, you know, sometimes I'll call somebody up, how's it going? Is everything all right? Are you happy with your order? And so that kind of direct consumer piece and the obsession with making sure your customers are happy is everything to us.
Definitely a byproduct of those businesses that have grown up in the digital age, that you kind of are born as D2C. We work with many as our clients, and when you ask them, what do you know about your consumer? And you basically can't stop them talking. They know it. They know everything, which historically hasn't always been the case when you've been once removed through distribution or whatever it may be. So great to hear that case from you, Amanda. So a quick break from Know and Low into some personal questions, if we may. So we always learn a lot from our podcast guests, kind of often about leadership. We like to ask them to think back to their younger years. Kind of what advice would you give yourself? Call it younger years, usually teenage when you're at school. But Ellie, we'll start with you. What advice would you give yourself if you could speak to your teenage self now?
I think simply don't be afraid to do things. You know, if you've got ideas, then act on them. You know, even if it doesn't work out, you will learn so much from it. And also you'll learn so much about about yourself. You know, I've learned loads about myself from starting a business and acting on an idea I had. And I think too often people kind of question themselves and think, oh, well, you know, I've got this idea, but I couldn't possibly do that. And they make up these reasons in their heads, which are basically, you know, non-existent. They're sort of these imaginary barriers. So yeah, I definitely say to my younger self, don't be afraid to do things. Even if you get it wrong, at least you've learned something and at least you've hopefully got something out of it. And also don't let people tell you what you can and can't do.
You're here, Ellie.
Yeah, I think we could all take that advice right now as well, actually. Yeah. Amanda, same question to you.
I think very simply, life is very short. Let's make it count. My husband faced a near-death experience recently, quite literally, and it made me recognise that even more acutely than I did anyway. I've always been as somebody who does my best to enjoy the moment, but that really is the greatest reminder when you're faced with that.
I love that. One of the questions that I always love to ask the founders that we talk to is, how did you have the guts to just go for it? Or, you know, what was your journey to just taking the plunge? Because I find that fascinating. Definitely, I love the idea of doing something, turning a passion or a side hustle into, you know, your vocation. But it's always just not having the guts to actually do it and take the plunge. So I love hearing these stories. I find them so inspiring.
But I think that's all that separates an entrepreneur from everybody else, yeah. Which it depends how you view that gulf, right? For most people, psychologically, it's vast. I always sort of brought my kids up and I've said to them, what's the worst that can happen? And usually the answer is nobody dies, going back to my point. So for me, that's a really good one to have in your head. What's the worst that can happen? But also equally, I do say this sometimes to entrepreneurs if they're asking me for advice and that they're wondering about whether to take the leap. And I don't know if Ellie would agree. I'm curious. I think if it's really not driving you enough, then probably don't do it, actually. Because, you know, otherwise, if you're not that sure, then you're going to face periods throughout the journey, every day almost, when you're going to face a challenge that might seem like a mountain. So I do think it must be a compulsion of sorts.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think the reality is, if you do have an idea and you want to act on it, there is going to be a lot of hard work along the way. And there are going to be lots of times where you want to pack it all in. And so if you aren't passionate about what you're doing and really believe in it, then I think you just need to kind of kick the tires on that first, really. And, you know, to the point about, you made earlier, making that leap, it doesn't happen overnight. And I think it is important to seek out sources of inspiration. You know, before I started my business, I listened to a lot of other people, podcasts like these. I listened to other people talking about their journey. And for me, it made what I was looking to do feel more attainable. So I would definitely recommend going out and finding your sources of inspiration, because that will help you and give you the confidence to kind of get on your way.
So just to come back to our category, I wanted to talk a little bit about alcohol-free in the context of the fact that one of the big stories out of the lockdown has actually been an increase in alcohol consumption, which is interesting, if not unexpected. And I was just interested, Ellie, if you've ever felt that there's an element of risk in marketing a no alcohol product, especially with trends like that.
Yeah, no, I mean, I've seen a lot of reports about, boozy Brits, but actually we did research recently and actually sales tell a different story. I think, yes, there are people that booze and have boozed quite a lot during lockdown, but there's also an awful amount of people that actually have taken positive steps towards their health and actually cutting down. And so is it a risk to market a product with no alcohol? No, I think I see our brands as incredibly positive, as we're enabling consumers to have better options and therefore make better choices when it comes to their drinking. You know, it's all about choice. There's plenty of alcohol options out there for people that want it, but you know, it's the choice factor from in terms of alcohol free is getting better, but still we just want an equal and a level playing field so that people do have that choice. So no, I don't think I do see it as a risk, I guess.
And Amanda, I wanted to talk to you also, well, I guess to Ellie's point, there definitely does seem to be a market for no and low. And that seems to be something that the big brands are recognizing as well. And I wondered what your kind of strategy is to compete with the big brands that are increasing.
We don't compete with anybody. We're way ahead. We know exactly what we're doing. We're the market leaders. And it's really, at the moment, there's no real competition in my category. Not that tastes good. And also, I think that we mustn't underestimate consumer behavior now. You know, people vote with their feet, and going back to ethics, going back to story, you know, this is parking the fact that I've got to have a perfect taste. You know, if Ellie's drinks and my drinks didn't taste amazing, people obviously aren't going to buy them just because of the ethics and the story. But let's, you know, we know how good our drinks are. So if you park that, the fact that you've got an independent brand that is going about things the right way, that is, you know, just hitting, I think, so many touch points with consumers. I just think it's almost impossible to compete with that. And actually, if you look at the drinks market, Ellie, you'll know a lot about it, I'm sure, from the fact that she used to drink in it. But it's a hugely acquisitive industry. And, you know, for many, many reasons, they just do not go about creating their own brands like ours from scratch. There are so many reasons why. I mean, you get some that come on board that are almost like sort of cheaper copies or you know, and I think often what you get is an incredibly expensive aesthetic brand, but then the product itself is lacking. So I have absolutely no fears about that. It's almost like Bring It On. It's a bit like that Coca-Cola Pepsi fight. I'm like, you know what? You'll be doing a lot more selling for me when there's another decent alcohol-free wine out there, actually, you know. So no, I've got no fears whatsoever about that. I know how far ahead we are.
In a perfect world, the best tasting product would always win, but with distribution deals and the power of media spend, it's not always the case.
You'd be surprised, though, because I think if you look at how all of the drinks brands have grown and then been whatever they've done in the world. I mean, one of my investor partners grew Camden, which was a famous craft beer. And I think if you look at almost every drinks brand that has gone on to be a household name that wasn't one of the huge famous historical players, it's the way all drinks brands are built. And I see no reason why that wouldn't be the reason for Ellie, me, all of our other alcohol-free brands being built.
So let's talk a bit more about brand, I suppose. So we are a marketing and advertising podcast at the end of the day, so we must ask you both a bit more about your brands. And I guess talking about the bigger brands, as we mentioned, the kind of observation I've had is that they kind of would often lead with a kind of social responsibility message. But as we said at the top, both of you have come out very, very, very confidently about No and Low is about kind of the fun and enjoyment, which we both love. So Ellie, your line about the joy of not drinking sums up very well. Amanda, kind of your naughty name is pregnant with meaning, which kind of us creative folk absolutely love. But let's hear a bit more about your brands. Ellie, we'll come to you first. You've talked about the origins in your kind of Latin roots, but tell us a bit more about kind of how you use your brand.
Clenu originated because there wasn't enough joy in the occasion of not drinking. And actually, I feel like we could all use more joy in our lives. And really, I see Clenu as being here, you know, as existing to help create that. So we did a campaign back at the beginning of this year in January. It feels like an age ago. We called it Joyful January because actually normally January is a time where it's grey, it's a bit miserable, no one's got any money. And actually we took the decision to actually bring January back to life and just name it Joyful January. And we threw a huge party in London. We had a massive party at a venue called Lost in Brixton, and you know, we had over 100 people attend. Everyone was drinking alcohol-free cocktails. You wouldn't have thought for a second that those drinks, you know, walking in there, that everyone was enjoying alcohol-free drinks. You know, the music was there. We had a live band. We're just all about turning things on its head and actually making that whole occasion of not drinking more enjoyable. But we want to extend that beyond just drinking. You know, we want to help create more joyful moments in people's lives. And that's what we're going to do. And that's what we're going to drive forward as a brand. You know, now more than ever, people need a little more joy in their lives. So for me personally, I see that as our purpose. And if we can, you know, our Instagram feed or our emails, if, you know, whatever we do can bring a smile to someone's face, we've done our job.
So Amanda, we love the name Naughty. Like, tell us about kind of where that came from and how you use that.
Yeah, I mean, I really wanted to bring the party without the hangover. And Naughty for me was really turning all of those sort of slightly depressing expectations on their head. We, you know, we were adamant that Naughty should be something you were choosing to drink, you know, to get that brilliant buzz. And so Naughty Moments was born, which is our hashtag. And we've just launched actually at the Shard, which obviously was interesting timing, but it'll be lovely to see when we can do some exciting things there when spring opens up. But the idea really for Naughty Moments was just creating those moments with the pop of the cork. And of course, what was happening really, and going back to my obsession in the old days with champagne, was that, you know, synonymous across the world with celebratory moments. And of course, everybody is not drinking, in a way, is not allowed to that party. And so I realized that if Naughty was there at the party, that was just this huge opportunity to start the party with the pop of the cork, create your naughty moment. And it's almost like you're forgetting about the fact that you're missing out on alcohol. And so that really was how Naughty came about. Obviously, Naught, I think some people have missed this because in America, where we've just launched, funny enough, Naught is actually just zero. And so it's not quite the same play. But Naught, of course, is 0%. So it was also a play on that, which some people have missed, actually, funny enough.
So our listeners would love to hear your predictions, if we can ask you, on the no and low category. So if I asked you both, if I can ask you to sum up in a sentence or two what you think the future of no and low is and where you see the category going, what would you say if we start with you, Amanda?
I think alcohol is the new tobacco, actually. And I've been saying that for a long time, even when I was selling champagne. And obviously, it's quite a provocative statement, but I really believe it is, from a legislative point of view, as well as if you really analyze global wellness trends. And I don't want to be facetious, but I think it's important in the movement that we're all instrumental in creating now, when we're talking about it, to actually squarely separate no from low, because the words to me actually don't have any relationship. And I've just been having this conversation with a new retail buyer. It's quite a debate in the industry, but I think because it's such an emerging category, it's being lumped together homogeneously. Now, if I wanted to create a low alcohol spritzer, I'd probably just get a glass of wine and add sparkling water. And I think low really doesn't mean anything in the alcohol-free space. And I'm all for really making sure we move to alcohol-free or no alcohol. I don't think low means much, actually.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with Amanda. I mean, this whole category is part of a massively growing health and wellness industry. And that trend isn't going anywhere anytime soon. So I believe the non-alcoholic category is just going to grow and grow. We're most definitely going to see more innovation next year. We're already seeing, I mean, I probably see a new brand on the market every week at the moment. So I don't know, if I look at spirits market and you compare what's happened in the gin category, you know, we saw loads of gin distilleries pop up, lots of smaller craft. So, you know, maybe for me, the spirits segment of the non-alcoholic category will follow a similar pattern. But actually you'll see four or five key players emerging as the kind of key non-alcoholic spirits. And of course, Kalenio will be one of them. And so I'm really excited to take Kalenio beyond just the UK and go international, because we're not international at the moment, but we're absolutely focused on the home market for now and really growing that space. But beyond that, we do want to go global. So yeah, really, really positive future for the category.
Before we let you go, we have a signature question, which we always like to ask our guests, and that is, what is your favourite TV ad and why have you chosen it? And of course, as we're audio only, please do your best to describe it. So, Amanda, we'll come to you first. What would be your favourite TV ad?
Yeah, this is a good one. Good question. I love ads that make me really feel something, going back to the obsession with passion and feeling. And I'm lucky to have a mentor and friend in the industry, retail industry actually, he's slightly different, called Peter Roos. He's quite famous in the retail world, and he was instrumental back in the day for putting John Lewis on the map, really, in retail. And he was behind, funnily enough, because I was WhatsApping him just when you mentioned this might be a question. I was WhatsApping him. I said, isn't this one of your ads? My favourite ads. And he was behind this ad. He commissioned it and worked on it, although he didn't actually direct or produce it. And it's called The Long Wait. And the original soundtrack was a Smith soundtrack, and it was the John Lewis ad when they were first famous for putting sort of seminal Christmas ads on the market, 2011. And it just really evokes such raw emotion. Then it does the thing that I think all of the best stories do, which it completely confounds all your expectations about gifts. And I won't give everything away because I want you all to watch it. But really, it's very pertinent for now because it makes us all focus on what giving actually means.
So please, please, please let me get what I want. Lord knows it would be the first time.
Yeah, it really is one of their best, isn't it? And yeah, you're right. This section of the podcast usually sends people straight to YouTube. So don't worry. I think that's what we'll all be doing. And actually, I'm doing a bit of research. There was an AI face reading tool called Realize actually named this 2011 ad as their number one.
I'd better tell Peter.
Well, there you go. but just for some context, this was created by their long-term partner Adam and Eve DDB, and you mentioned obviously the Smiths cover, which again, a famous cover, became kind of very much synonymous with John Lewis Christmas ad. So excellent choice.
Yeah, excellent choice. It's one of my favorites as well. You'll be interested to know we do actually debate the John Lewis Christmas strategy ourselves in terms of thinking the right thing. But there is absolutely no question that ad is remarkable. Ellie, how about you?
Oh, God, yeah, it's a toughie. I mean, there's so many brilliant ads out there, and I totally agree with Amanda. You know, ads that actually make you feel something are honestly the best. So I just thought about one that I'd seen recently that really moved me, and I ended up sending it to the team. But one of my favourite TV ads that I've watched this year was Nike's You Can't Stop Us film. I mean, it features actually a collective of everyday athletes and elite athletes, and there's a split screen, and the way they've done it's really clever. I mean, I really like the sentiment that we can keep reimagining the world, but anything is still possible. And just Nike, just what they've done, they're a brilliant brand. They've stood the test of time. We all know the Just Do It campaign. It's an absolute classic. It's simple message that's absolutely transcended through time and pushed ordinary athletes to go beyond their limits. So I just think it's brilliant having that split screen, really clever way of transcending that message. So, yeah, I thought that was a good one.
And no matter how bad it gets, we will always come back stronger. Because nothing can stop what we can do together.
I love one of my favorite entrepreneur books I recommend. I love the Nike founder story, Shoe Dog. I don't know if any of you guys have read Shoe Dog. It's the most incredible business book.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Nike are really, really smart advertisers, not only in terms of their consistency of their message, but also how, yes, they might feature, you know, elite athletes, but their message feels so relatable for all of us. Just a bit on that one. So this is Nike's third film in their You Can't Stop Us campaign. I don't know if you've seen any of the others, Ellie, but I find them all equally compelling. They're created by Wideman Kennedy in the US. And a fun fact, apparently they searched through 4,000 pieces of footage to find the perfect shots for that split screen approach.
Yeah, that's a very impressive production to get that, to make it look so seamless. Yeah,
I'm excited to see them. I haven't seen them.
Well, go check it out, man.
There you go. Podcast, YouTube, that's the journey. Well, two fantastic choices there. And that's it. That's it from us today. So thank you both so much for joining us. It's been a great, very interesting and enjoyable chat. I, for one, fancy a drink tonight. So there we go. We wish you both so we wish you both much success. Thank you again for joining us, and hopefully we'll catch up again soon. Thanks very much.
Thank you for having us. Great to see you all. Cheers, Ellie.
Bye-bye.
Bye, guys. Bye.